Wrestling Soup is intended for a mature audience. We like to use naughty words.
Wrestling Soup. I'm Anthony Bisciari Thomas, joined along with the Kevin Castle. What's going on, Kev?
What's up, man? How's it going?
Not much. Glad everything's starting to fucking warm up around here a little bit. We had some snow over the weekend, and it didn't stick, thank fucking goodness, because the last thing I want to do is drive through that shit anymore.
So. Yeah, it's, what was it, like 37 degrees today as we're recording this?
Oh, that's not bad.
Tuesday. Yeah, no, it's not bad, actually. I'm wearing the light winter jacket.
But it's been another week in wrestling. Obviously, we're passing over the MLK Day and the fanfare. Yes, you want to say fanfare? The regard that came with that day. So, but shit, I don't know, man. It's the Royal Rumble season. We had Monday Night Raw go on. You know, it was a decent Raw. There was some fun parts, and I don't even know what to feel about it. Like, I guess the fun parts for me was seeing shit like Rey Mysterio throw Dominic outside the ring. I had a nice, genuine moment with that. Like, did you see that match, that whole matchup and with the Street Profits?
I did watch Raw last night. I thought it was okay. You know, I get, you get so acclimated to everybody thinking Raw is the worst thing ever. And, you know, you try not to let other, not just podcasters, but fans influence whether you're going into it with a good attitude. And you, like me, like I think we're similar like that. And I'll even say Anthony to a degree. We go into watching WWE events with hopefulness and good, and maybe a nice surprise, and maybe it'll be good. I don't think any of us watch it and go, this is going to suck. Oh, I'd rather be doing anything else right now. Until we see it, we don't know. You know what I mean? I think that's always been all of our attitudes. If, correct me if I'm wrong, but working with you guys, that's all. I've never known you to be like Debbie Dow, I got to watch Raw tonight. I mean, listen, sometimes we've had to drag ass through things, but
only the most part, we're,
but beforehand, we're like, okay, maybe it'll be good.
Right.
You know, like more than, oh, fuck, this is going to suck. I don't think any of us, and that gets draining after a while to be so negative. I think more glass half full is just works for me better, especially over the last few years. So I'm going with glass half full.
Well, that's true. I mean, for the most part, Raw, SmackDown, WWE shows usually pop out with one or two, you know, on average. You can always expect one or two good moments of the show. And if you're lucky, you get a lot more than that. And, you know, Raw in January tends to deliver more often than not. And that's kind of the MO always. It's almost like they save their best stuff for the beginning of the year. Because, obviously, everything's the road to WrestleMania, you know? Mm-hmm. But, enjoyed the little father-son moment of Rafe throwing Dominic out. What else did I enjoy? I enjoyed the Maurice's, the old brick in the purse trick. When she smashed Beth Phoenix in the head, dude, I fucking laughed my ass off at that.
I saw you post that. I thumbed that. I saw that you post that on Twitter. The old brick in the purse trick. I mean, that brings us back to the loaded purse days of Missy Hyatt itself, you know. And what else? Who else had a load? Oh, Sherry. I think she, back in the day, right, had a loaded purse here and there when she was scary. Sherry.
Or she'd use her boot.
She used a boot. Yeah. And the way people would go down, right? They'd go down like they just shot in the back of the head. But the brick in the purse is definitely that's old school. If you wanted old school stuff, you got it with the brick in the purse.
Well, not only that, you know, and I gave her more praise yesterday too, and you could tell Maurice gets it. As far as a lot of the women on the roster, I think that there's a majority of them that don't really understand why they're there sometimes.
Yeah.
Maurice gets on the microphone and does the thing that you're not supposed to do anymore. And she directly addresses the audience because the audience starts booing. And she turns around. She's like, I can be louder on the mic than any of you, you know? And I was like, that's fucking great.
She gets it. And I think because the Miz does get it, whether you could say what you want, you don't have to be a fan. He wrestles too safe, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
He's more concerned about True being a celebrity than a good wrestler. Say what you want, but the guy does get the business. He gets the showbiz side of wrestling, of entertainment. He does. And that's why he is a focal point guy. It doesn't necessarily have to be tippy-top world champion, but he's a star.
Yeah.
And you can't take that away from him. Anybody wants to dumb it down, you can dumb it down all you want. He's a star. And so is she.
Yeah, they both are. They both work so well together, let alone their reality show, but together. These two are just fucking fantastic. And the idea of putting them up against different couples. I kind of like it. It kind of makes sense. We're in a world now where it's like, hey, look, wrestler A is married to wrestler B. Why do we have to ignore it? You know, I still think it's really funny that, you know, Becky and Seth really don't gravitate towards each other like other couples do. And they're so important. They're even on the same brand now. It's like, I would expect them to do more stuff together. Like when Becky comes out there, and yesterday was a really good example. She cut a very generic opening promo, very, very Seth-like. And I was thinking the whole time, I'm like, why isn't Seth there just with her? Like, he doesn't have to be the focal point, but that's still his wife. Like, why isn't he just there to add in his two cents or just to even stand vanguard next to her? You know, like, I don't know. It's like little things like that, you know? And I mean, don't get me wrong. Obviously, WWE has a master plan, but it's kind of like, you know, I forgot who it was. Somebody brought it up in WWE not that long ago, saying, talking about the one time that Becky was manhandled by Baron Corbin. And I think it might have been on SmackDown, too, that was brought up. But I'm like, right. Yeah, that's a good reason to have Seth around at all times when you're talking about Becky. It's like, and I know we go back, and I remember doing the show. Even I think we even did like a crossover show even back then. Mm-hmm. And I was like, man, that was one of the times that Corbin could have been launched into super villainy at that fucking moment if he just rolled with it. And Seth could have become an insanely over babyface if he would have just beaten the living shit out of Corbin, and it never came. You know, they had a match, but it was like a really generic match, you know? And it's like, man, it was one of those moments. I think that a lot of fans sit back and go, wow, they could have made three different careers that day. They could have made Seth Rollins. They could have made Baron Corbin, and they could have made Becky Lynch. Becky Lynch was already made, but showing that vulnerability to her was a completely different fucking moment. But I digress. Here we are in Royal Rumble time. I guess one of the things I definitely wanted to bring up outside of this is, so have you been following the Tammy shit?
Yeah, I learned that the weapon she had was a scissors, correct?
Yeah. She was given like two charges with a weapon with a non-firearm and one charge for like terroristic threats, which was like, it was explained to me, at least by, you know, dialogue through TMZ and other places, that it's the kind of charge you get for threatening an entire building or threatening a group of people.
Threatening an assembly of people. My cop friend of mine was kind of telling me what likely happened, but do we know who the ex, who the boyfriend was? Was it that wrestler guy that she had stalked before from years ago, that Damien guy? We didn't get a name, did we?
No. Okay. I haven't seen a name anywhere, but that's probably your safe bet. Yeah. You know, because you already have a history. You already got a history with them. It's kind of like, But so according to the police report, Tammy was waving scissors at the direction of her partner and then threatened to kill him. An officer on the site said or witnessed what happened and arrested Tammy. In her first comment since the arrest, she said, "I'm okay. I am laying low for a bit, but I'm okay. Don't believe the media. Please don't." And the arresting officer in his report noted that Tammy seemed to be under the influence of drugs or alcohol at the time of the incident.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I mean, considering her past, it doesn't really surprise me that maybe she fell off the wagon a little bit. You know, people in times of stress often make mistakes. She does face a possibility. Well, whether these charges get dropped and stuff like that, we don't know. But I mean, there's, what was it? The possibility of 5 years, 2 to 5 years.
Yeah. Something like that. Like maximum of 5 years. Yeah.
Yeah. Dude. I don't know. What do you do with this girl? What do you do with this girl at this point?
You know, we talked about it a little bit last week that, you know, I don't want to, you know, shit on somebody when they're already being shit on massively by other people. But also, I understand and listening to other podcasts that I tend to, you know, want to hear other people's opinions, see if anybody's defending her, anybody's going over the top. And I think the consensus is, you know, we all want to see people get help. I mean, we've all been in a position where we've needed help or an intervention, whether it's for some sort of addiction. It can be for anything. It could be an addiction to bad relationships, like, oh, I met this new guy. Look, we got to talk, right, you know, like, right. Or someone who's addiction to alcohol, drugs or whatever, trying to help someone quit smoking. But this is being an addiction to being incarcerated or being arrested.
Yeah.
As she continues to get arrested and build up this arrest record, which is nearly 10 arrests, over the years in record, almost record time. A matter of fact, I think they're saying, as a person in the entertainment industry, all pro wrestling, she's been arrested the most times ever of any wrestler, or if they want to consider her a wrestler. That's not a record that you want to have.
No.
You know what I mean?
No,
that's horrible. You don't want to surpass Dick Slater. And you know, right. You know what I'm saying, Mitch? Or, Buck Zumhoff. Obviously, they've had, their crimes were a lot more heinous. Dick Slater tried to murder somebody, and Buck Zumhoff did what he did with child molestation. But being arrested multiple times is not badass. It's not cool. I mean, I'm sure even there's convicts like, damn, she got arrested again, right? People in jail like, again? To reoffend like that means, Mitch, and tell me if I'm wrong, that she has learned nothing from being incarcerated.
I don't think she has. I think she pretty much marches to the tune of her own fucking drummer. Mm-hmm. I think she's always been that person. Dude, even when the riots were going on, and we can talk about this too, and this is in the past, but people can look it up. You know, Tammy was very racial. She was very racial at the time that the riots were going on, and she, she caught herself, or she was called out for saying some pretty heinous shit, man. Like, the kind of stuff that people get canceled permanently for. And it doesn't surprise me that it came from Tammy, though. Do you know what I mean? Like, if that came from somebody like Sting, I'd be like, what the fuck is that?
Yeah, it's Sting. You know what I mean? Did someone hack Sting account? Sting's account? Well, now that I saw what you said, it was 2 summers ago. It'll be 2 years ago this summer that happened. Wow, 2 years already. Yeah. George Floyd. Yeah. And she not only she doubled down. She came back at, she almost was doing a lot of laughing emojis at people who were upset at her. She was basically like, fuck you, I'm going to say even more stuff. And there was nothing, again, we have talked off the air about certain people who say maybe inflammatory things, whether it's a work, whether it's not, it's part of shtick or whatever. But I think she absolutely believes. And listen, and probably I'm going to take a shot here of knowing people who've been incarcerated. Many of us might know people that sometimes when you go to jail, you do have to kind of pick a side, so to speak, to survive there. So perhaps she got together with some people and showing her, people say, well, showing her true colors as a racist or whatever. I don't know if this has always been embedded or if she's been known like this. People have said stuff about her over the years about certain things. And listen, I've never, you don't necessarily, and people have to forget, you don't have to be caught, and you know this too, Mish, you don't have to be caught saying the N-word to be a closet racist. You know, there it is, racist said the N-word. Right, right. That's not, people look for this kind of stuff. It could be there all along, and you never really realized it because there wasn't a reason to bring it up.
Right.
Just like with Hulk Hogan, remember? Why do you bring it up now? Because someone, an African-American, is dating his daughter. Now he's going to say what he really, even if it was supposed to be a private conversation, because that's his family. Now it's affecting him. He's going to say, okay, so he's shown his true colors. All right, yes or no, we don't really know. Could be a moment in time. We don't really know. But with Tammy, she doubled down. It wasn't just one statement. I think if you could look it up. Multiple. If you pulled it, there's a bunch of tweets, not just one.
Yeah. No, there is.
You know, and I think she may be in prison, you know, just the kind of.
Well, you know, she wasn't talking like that in prison. Come on now.
No. But I'm saying maybe had a segregated group, for lack of a better word, that she hung around with or whatever. And she's allowing her prison, blather.
Maybe.
To come out and in real life and go, hey, maybe in the joint you could say that and you could have separation of church and state there. But outside here, we're trying to be inclusive and come together. Not, Mish, what do we say again? We should get a shirt with this on the back of it at this point. Read the room. Right? The Tammy did not read the room that day at all. She didn't read society, the room, the book. She didn't read anything. She skipped the complete book.
Yeah, she skipped the chapters, bro. So on that same note, I did kind of come into something a little bit funny. So before, and I do mean the day before Tammy was arrested, I believe this might have come from Tammy herself, but I have 4 issues of Tammy's first appearances in wrestling magazines in completely mint condition with a fucking cardboard backer in plastic, never been fucking read. I've got her WWF from September 1996. I've got another WWF magazine from March of 96. I've got Inside Wrestling, where she was on the cover of September 96. And then her PWI, the PWI poll in June of 1998. all in perfect. And I do mean like, dude, even the backing, the fucking magazine isn't even cracked open. It's never been fucking read. So I think this was something that Tammy was getting rid of just to make a couple of dollars. And I happened to get a hold of them. And then the next day she was arrested. So, so I'm thinking about doing something maybe with the listeners. We can give it away, send them out to some listeners. We got to figure out a contest, Kev. We got to figure out some way to do this, but
yes,
that's not necessarily to get people on board the Patreon or nothing like that. But you know, I don't know. It's cool to have. I might keep one of them, but I'll definitely get rid of the other ones. So, but it's cool. It's cool as shit to have.
That sounds pretty cool. And listen, she still has a fan base of sorts, obviously, that OnlyFans. I don't know how many people were getting the OnlyFans or whatever. I think
it was funny. The first things I saw about that, too, was Sonny's arrested. May as well remember to cancel my Only. Or somebody said, Sonny's arrested. Make sure you guys cancel your OnlyFans for a couple of years. Because I guess what happened last time is exactly what me and Joey talked about, too, was that, you know, when she was in the joint the first time, her OnlyFans was still running. And people were just automatically subscribed. So she was accruing a shit ton of money for absolutely no content for like a year or so.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? That's what a lot of people do. Like, I mean, and I'm not saying that for Patreon or anything else like that, but there's a lot of people that just say, okay, I put $10 away a month or $20 away a month for this. And they just leave it at that. And they just forget about it because it's within their finances and it doesn't really make a bunch, you know? So. Absolutely.
Wrestling Soup will be right back.
So, all right. Cody Rhodes is now officially a free agent.
Exciting. WWE bound.
Oh, man. Sean Ross Sapp is saying that Cody Rhodes, current TNT champion, is a free agent and has not signed a new deal with AEW. Apparently the contract ran out at the end of 2021, and Cody, who also holds an executive position within the company, is working on what seems to be a handshake agreement. What led to him not signing remains a mystery, but it's highly unlikely and remotely unthinkable that he would leave the promotion for that he helped create, of course. Rhodes, along with Young Bucks, Kenny Omega, driving forces behind AEW, along with Tony Khan. Well, so, okay. So here's the thing. And the premise is a lot of people want Cody Rhodes to go to WWE. A lot of them don't. I don't think he's leaving anyways. And it's not just because AEW is the promotion that he helped create, but AEW is the promotion that helped make Cody Rhodes a star. Instead of everybody thinking about what Cody Rhodes did for AEW, people don't really realize what AEW did for Cody Rhodes. Cody Rhodes has now been a part of TV. He's got a game show. He's got a reality series. Like, and he's been interviewed in random places on, you know, big TV networks and stuff like that. He's become the established icon for AEW, along with guys like Kenny Omega, along with the Young Bucks, along with Chris Jericho. He has been that established talent. So while Cody Rhodes has done a lot for AEW, that is true. AEW, in return, has reciprocated in more than a few ways.
I agree. And the funny thing is all the venom and you know, a lot of the aggression people show towards. And I don't even think it's because of he's a baby face or whatever heel. I just think a lot of people are not big Cody Rhodes guys.
Oh, I'm not.
And, you know, even the people – I'm not a big Cody. I'm a big Dusty Rhodes fan. Right. I've never been a big fan – honestly, never been a big fan of Goldust or Dustin Rhodes.
I like Dustin. I'll give my two cents there. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I'm more of a Dusty guy, and I've never been a Cody guy. I never really got it. I never thought he was very special and doing a twist on the American Dream, the American Nightmare. It never really clicked.
Right.
I've never seen anybody – and I've said this before. I gauge things – especially since I've been back to work in July and working clubs and concerts and stuff and working with young bands, 20-somethings, who are wrestling fans wearing the shirts to the shows. And I've readily admitted I've seen AEW shirts at my show. Mm-hmm. I have seen plenty of, what do you call, old school, obviously the Austins, the traditionals. Yeah, but as far as like new stuff goes, I've seen AEW as itself a shirt, the brand AEW.
Right.
But I've never seen anybody wear a Cody Rhodes shirt. I've never seen anybody wear a Kenny Omega shirt. But those two big stars, I've seen head of the table shirts. I've seen more fucking tribal chief shirts than I've been surprised, actually, the big turnaround for people rocking Roman merchandise in the last year and a half when they didn't wear it 3 years before. Obviously, the heel turn helped. But I've never seen a Kenny Omega shirt or Cody Rhodes ever. And even to guys who weren't AEW fans, I'll say, you know, you're like, oh, fuck, I hate Cody Rhodes. I'm like, he started this whole thing that you're wearing.
Right.
Like, he's not that heroic guy to you. And most AEW fans I talk to couldn't care less if he left. They don't care. It's almost like, yeah, thanks for building this up, but we've kind of gotten past you already. You were that guy, and if you were that guy, you're not that guy anymore, and we don't care if you're on TV ever again.
I think it's because people figured out the bullshit. I mean, let's be honest.
You think Cody comes off very disingenuous, and why his own is eating him up, so to speak?
Look at how he treated social media. Look at how people reacted. True, yeah. Dude, he buried his own Twitter account and left different parts of social media just so that he could be in his own echo chamber, just so he could be protected up against other people's thoughts and opinions. And that's not really somebody that inspires anyone to follow or enjoy somebody's character. Another factor is when that reality show came out, it did him no favors. It didn't do him or Brandy.
No, it didn't make him look cool at all. No, it didn't make him look. You know, where me and you, and you've admitted, you're kind of a fan of the Miz and Maurice show, right?
Yeah, of course.
I like it too, and I actually like them more, and I definitely like them as a couple, and I don't think it's an act. I think they'll be married forever, these two. Yeah. And good for them if they are. You know, the celebrity marriage is very
well. Even the family that's around. See, here's the thing that's really different, which is why Miz and Maurice are so fucking special. And this isn't just blowing smoke or anything like that. But them as how many fucking reality shows are on TV, Kev? A million? Does it feel like a million? Like,
and so many have come and gone in one season. Yeah.
And so many of them are horrible. They're just
unwatchable.
Exploitations of ego is what a lot of these reality shows. I'm the richest, I'm the prettiest, I'm the coolest, I get into the most clubs. Like, it's always this exploitation of ego. But the Miz and Mrs. show is fun because not only are Miz and Maurice people that should be, they absolutely should be those ego people, but they're corny. And they enjoy each other because they're corny. And their moms are corny. And Mrs. dad is corny. Oh, like, God. The whole family, even the kids are goofballs. Like, everybody has no problem making fun of themselves or being put in awkward situations for our enjoyment. But it's genuine love at the end of the show. You don't feel like, oh, these people are just fucking doing the script. Like, I'm sure the script is a part of it. We know how reality shows work.
Of course,
But the way that they fucking perform, the way that they act in their normal lives, the way that they converse with their friends and family, it's funny. It's absolutely funny because here you have Maurice, who's like this fucking supermodel, this Playboy girl, let alone a WWE diva, wrestler, et cetera, et cetera. And then you have The Miz, who has his accolades in MTV before he ever came into WWE and stuff like that. And has established himself with countless of like legendary feuds over the years. So you have two people that have a weight to them. And then you have the cast of stars coming in. You got Jomo coming in. You get Zack Ryder coming in every once in a while. It's like, it's really well done. Like, overall, it's exactly what you expect in 2021 or 2022 for a wrestling family to be like, or what you would want a wrestling family to be like. And then you can look at Brandy and fucking Cody, and that was just, it was self-serving. The Brandy
seems
meetings.
Contrived is the best word I could use for that. I mean, just, and not relatable. And I wound up I liked Brandy and thought she was a very attractive woman. She was the backstage announcer for the WWE and stuff. I know she got together with Cody Rhodes. I thought they were kind of a cute couple.
Yeah.
Then they got to AEW and I got to know a lot more about them and see them behind the scenes and them interacting with people and fans outside. I'm like, I don't like these two.
Yeah, they both had.
I like Dusty outside the ring. I liked his dad. Right. And I don't like the way Cody talks to fans. I don't like the way he talks to people. The online stuff, I think, you know, gets him in that IWC community. But even on the outside, I'm not a big fan of his. And I didn't like Brandy at all. And I didn't think she was being, the moody person who was like pregnant or whatever. I just think
even when she's not pregnant, I didn't like her.
And I just, again, it is absolutely,
they lack humility is what it is. I think both of them lack humility, that's going to keep their relationship strong because they're on the same wavelength, but they lack humility. They don't know how to read the room. you know?
Yeah, no, another couple of those I'd read the room. I watched a couple episodes of that. I'm like, I don't like anybody. And I'm not liking the people who are appearing as guests just because they're appearing on it.
Right.
You know, so it's like even when she was in that room with Jade,
yeah,
and that the red velvet and stuff, I just didn't even like the way she was interacting with her. I'm like, I don't like this thing. I don't like this. I just don't want to watch this. I have no interest in watching any further episodes of this. And I'm thinking that Cody, much like CM Punk, who have been critics of The Miz in the past, and why is this guy so famous and kind of like to clown him, they don't get that the reason that The Miz is good at what he does is because also he's just absolutely being an amped up version of himself.
Yes.
And also, Miz, say what you want about him, he is a old school, long time wrestling fan. There's pictures of him with his 10th birthday party with an Ultimate Warrior cake and wearing Ultimate Warrior shirts to baseball games and stuff. He's a fan. He's not a guy who got into the business. So I think they want us to look at guys like that. Oh, he's from a reality show. That guy made the most. And so did John Morrison, when you think about it. Yeah. I mean, but and Cody is, of course, the heritage, the Rhodes. He's right. He's a fan. His family was
it's
embedded
ego.
In this
more,
culture.
More it's exploitation of ego, man. Like
it's ego, right? But the difference, and like I said, him and his dad, night and day. The Dusty got polka dots over and dancing with no shirt on, being 300 pounds, and people loved every fucking minute of it.
Right.
They didn't love it because the fat guy's dancing. They thought Dusty was cool,
right?
Everyone thought no one ever. I've never.
Dusty
I
think got him, just some random girl sapphire over.
I mean, and we thought it was, and it wasn't like, oh, they're laughing because the fat white guy is dancing with the heavy African American. No, they thought he was cool.
They were having a good
and people
time.
People like they were having a good time. It is much different. No one was laughing. They were laughing with Dusty, not at him. And I think people are looking at Cody like, and it's listen, it's a
but
hard
this is
thing
only one side of
you,
it.
Dad.
I mean, when it you want to, if you want to discuss it even further, take a look at what Cody's done inside the ring. Take a look at the way that Cody's career has been treated in AEW. Like, he makes himself seem so magnanimous by wrestling all this lower tier talent. But the fact that it's even presented as people are below or you know, not on Cody's level, like that whole shit that he did with, oh my God, Anthony Ogogo. Where he was basically ending racism in one match, and it was like,
oh God, that speech was so ridiculous. What a ridiculous speech that fell on deaf ears on both sides of the racial fence, I think.
Yeah.
That just, I think there were some people giving props for it, but for the most part, everyone's like, oh God, dude. Like, it is amazing, though, if it wasn't for him, much more for his credit than the Bucks or Omega. They came along as side guys. Cody Rhodes, to me, would you say, Mish, is as far as hooking up with Tony Khan, nearly 100% responsible for the existence of AEW.
You know what's funny about that? You're right, but it wasn't because of Cody. When Cody was first establishing himself,
it was getting other people on board.
Well, it was when they gave him the championship from Magnus.
Right.
When they established him, right, when they started establishing him as not just a wrestling guy, but here is the guy who's going to rein in the new generation and the old generation of wrestlers in one fell swoop. They knew what they were doing. He was painted correctly. He had the name. He had the look. He wasn't the worst thing on the mic. He had a WWE following. Matter of fact, you know, me and Joe enjoyed Cody Rhodes back when he was in WWF. There was a lot of positives that guy brought about that were obviously squashed by creative. I mean, from everything from the face mask and the paper bags. I wasn't a big on the Stardust stuff, but even him with Ted DiBiase, I looked forward to. Like, the guy really does have talent. There's nothing that I can say that would ever take that away. It's just the attitude. It's what comes with him. It's this, this overwhelming. And I made the comparison before. But he literally feels to me like the new version of Jeff Jarrett. Everything is about being the king of the mountain. Everything is about being the top. Like, Cody Rhodes' ego will not allow him to ever be placed below what he feels he's worth. Not what other people see his worth as, but what he feels he's worth. You know what
I agree.
Saying?
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. I agree.
Yeah, man. So the idea that he's a free agent, do I think that he's going to leave AEW? No. AEW's done too much for his career. It's done too much for his image. It's made connections besides money. It's made connections for him in different industries. You know, he's allowed to continue this. I wouldn't be surprised if he stays with AEW on a handshake agreement.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I totally agree. I mean, but do you think for shits and giggles, or WWE would even entertain this, would Cody take a meeting to see what WWE would offer him as a free agent?
Oh, you think like the Randy Orton thing?
Yeah.
Where Randy Orton's like, hey, Vince.
Or would WWE even say, no, we're not even doing it for shits and giggles because, you know, you're not going to sign. You're not going to waste our time. You think WWE would say, all right, if you really want to talk, come down to Connecticut, bring the wife, and we'll talk.
I thought you meant just to
leverage himself to get a better deal.
What I was going to say. Do you, like the Randy Orton thing where he told Vince that, yeah, AEW's looking, and just to get a couple more shekels, you know, on the contract bottom line, I could see Cody entertaining it. But considering how recent it's been that he's made his feelings very public about WWE, he's made his feelings very public about people within WWE. It would be interesting, but let's entertain for a second that Cody does go to WWE, Kev. How do you think WWE would use him?
He would team up with Robert Stone and manage Von Wagner. There would be a love triangle angle with Brandy and Von Wagner. Anything to get Von Wagner up. Or maybe... where would Cody place? Let's fantasy booking. Where would Cody place in WWE today, in modern WWE? Obviously, he's not going to go to NXT. He would be on Raw, SmackDown, obviously. If he comes in with Brandy has to be his valet or his Maurice, so to speak.
They'd have to go against Miz and Maurice almost immediately.
They would probably have to go up against Miz and Maurice. I mean, right there, I would think the angle, let's do this thing with the battle of the reality show couples.
Right,
you know, the heir to the throne, you know, the king and queen right now, Miz Maurice, and the upcomers with the new show. Maybe he'd even say, if you can plug my show, like there would be all these little asterisks put in. If I was to go back, I would need this, almost like with the Ultimate Warrior when he needed his comic book to be put over in 96. That's the only thing I can think of. Right, that's in a fantasy booking. If it was to happen, just like if OJ did it. Cody Rhodes has to come in. The media program was with Miz and Maurice in a top flight program that would go through three pay-per-views. Cody would have to come out on top of something.
No,
I don't know if the fanfare is it even there. Like, even a fantasy book, would that be? I mean, I guess it would blow up the dirt sheets and the
websites. I think they would make an impact. I don't know. If that's
initially they'd make it
right. I don't know if it would be the kind of feud that's going to bring in new fans like that. I don't see, but I could absolutely see the fan base that's already in existence would fucking love it. I would love it. I would love to see that little matchup.
Yeah. Especially, and him and Miz, physically size wise, right. Body type wise, style wise, they match up pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Cody Rhodes versus Miz. I don't even know if they battle when he was
back during the NXT tryout days and stuff like that.
That's right, yeah, because 15 years ago Cody was up and coming and as a rookie. That's correct. Yeah, you're right, they probably did meet in the Florida championship or something like that.
I mean, like when Miz was a mentor.
Oh, when he was a mentor.
I was pretty sure they had something. Yeah, when he had Daniel Bryan and stuff like that. I'm pretty sure right around that time I think Cody was still around too.
So. Yeah, with Stardust. I don't remember if Stardust and Miz met in any matches.
Oh, not the Stardust version, no.
Oh, they'd have to bring him back as Stardust.
Oh, God, that would be horrible. Jesus.
And make Brandy Mrs. Stardust.
Bring him back as Dashing or Mustache Cody Rhodes. Something.
I like the putting the paper bag over people's heads. Oh, I that love that gimmick. Fucking great. I love that gimmick.
And people fucking see, that's just some, and going into WWE creative, that's one of the things that they put the kibosh on. And it's like, why? People were looking forward to getting a bag put on their fucking head, you know?
Go to ringside and getting the bag treatment. I remember when we were doing shows, me and Anthony, those were fun segments. I enjoyed that gimmick of putting the bag when he was the Phantom of the Opera.
Right, right.
I thought it was great. Matter of fact, I'm now being nostalgic. Maybe later on I'm going to go to YouTube and look at some clips. Yeah. I enjoyed that. It didn't last very long, but it lasted long enough that it could have got really over. You're right, and having people come to the arena with bags and put them on their own head. That's a great gimmick.
Can you imagine? And I guess
it's self-deprecating. Yes. It's like we can all joke about it. I mean, who wouldn't want to be bagged?
Right.
We'd all love that.
Right. But yeah. I mean, can you imagine that fucking moment when Standards and Practices, S&P came in there and said, hey, you can't really have Cody put paper bags on people. Oh Jesus, dude.
I would love the paper bag treatment. That would be awesome.
It would be fucking hilarious. And I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, it's too far back now. But I wouldn't be surprised if some fans said, yeah, you know, I was just going to buy regular seats, but I knew that Cody was going to be there and he's going to be on TV. So I bought the front row tickets just to see if I could get a bag on my head.
Again, I think that would be great. And the whole, how long ago was the bag? Seven years ago?
Maybe even eight. Longer than that, man.
Yeah. Less than a decade. Yes, less than a decade ago. And who was his second there? He had, didn't he have a henchman?
Well, he had Cody? Ted DiBiase for a little bit.
Right.
He also had fucking,
Swagger wasn't with him, right?
Was it Swagger?
I can't remember. Didn't he have a henchman? I thought he had a side guy, like when he was doing the bag thing. And actually the guy would put the bag on people's head, not just Cody, but he had some henchman, didn't he? I can't remember.
Yeah, well, it was Ted DiBiase when he was doing dashing.
Right.
And I'm taking a look here.
And then when he got with the Phantom mask, didn't he have like a second, like, or a person who came with him?
Man.
I can't remember.
Biff Busick, Oni Lorcan.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Wow.
Shit.
That's right. Holy shit, that was Oni Lorcan.
Yeah, that's how long ago.
Oh, my God, I forgot that was Oni Lorcan. Wow. And he's gone too now.
Yeah, he's gone too.
Yeah, they let him go. Bring him back. Bring Oni back in the bag. I want to see that.
Bring back Ted. Well, I don't know if they can bring back Ted. Isn't Ted like doing some? He's got some legal issues going on.
Yeah, right he's now. Got him and his dad with the seniors thing, raising money and inappropriate funds, inappropriating funds.
Yeah, that's fucking.
Everyone's got their problems.
Yeah,
got
right.
We all got our problems.
Fuck, man.
Some created by their own self and others just bad circumstances.
Right. I
wish you really would though. You're listening to Wrestling Soup.
I believe I want a big bowl of wrestling soup.
So we got one thing that did pop up. The one of the reasons to watch the crown jewel coming up in February is they got the Elimination Chamber in there. And one of the big issues apparently that's going on right now is that they wanted to have the women in the Elimination Chamber. And apparently Saudi Arabia might be against that, or at least some of them are. And I mean, I was talking a little bit about this with DT. I'm like, look, they don't even have to do it. I understand why they want to do it, because the whole reason, and I know people are like, oh, the only reason WWE is over there is because of money. Yes and no. Yes, okay. Of course, money is number one. But number two was Saudi wanted WWE over there because they wanted to embrace foreign culture entertainment. They wanted to embrace more American things. And that was a fact. I mean, before the whole Khashoggi thing and everything else like that, Saudi was trying to turn over a new leaf on how they treat their citizens, how the culture is. They wanted to adopt and embrace new things. And WWE was one of the spearheadings of this. And people seem to forget that. So while we have had women's matches over there and they've dramatically changed their costumes, like Sasha and Bayley and stuff like that, in order to not offend the culture that already exists there, it's like, at what point do you push too far and really start to embarrass the people? You know, obviously it's not embarrassing to us. A female Elimination Chamber is right up the fans' alley. Like, I think most American fans would be like, oh, this is cool as shit. But dealing with a completely different culture with completely different ideals and morals and everything else that gets involved when it comes to their entertainment, you know, how far is too far, Kev?
To push our ideas and our way on the Saudis?
Well, but they kind of wanted that, though, too. That's why we're over there initially. That's why the deal got struck. I mean, for WWE, it was the dollar signs. But for them, it was almost like they wanted to
show the world that they can partake in not only just American, but worldly culture of entertainment that a lot of other countries and continents enjoy. Yeah. No, I mean, I think so, but it's like slow and steady wins the race, so to speak, because you can't overwhelm them with too much. You do it at a pace, and every time you go back, it gets a little bit better. and the women are more involved and more of a. Now, no, I don't think we're going to get back to scantily clad or Sasha Banks wearing the little tight booty short right. or Alexa Bliss's ass hanging out. That's not going to happen. But as far as more inclusive, the women more part of the show, better and better every time. Yeah, slow and steady build up. Absolutely. Not too much. You don't want to overwhelm and kind of, you know, make insistences upon a regime that was so resistant to right. these things for so many years. You pace yourself. You know, it's like Thanksgiving dinner. You pace yourself while you're eating. You know, and again, we say it throughout the show. Again, we got to put it on the shirt. You know, read the room and read where you're at with these people. I don't mean to say it like derogatory, these people, but where you're at with them, how they're sensing. I'm sure at the discussions and negotiations, whether they do a big Zoom call or whether they get together in a room, you know, all live and in person.
Oh, I imagine it's old school. It's probably Vince and the Prince sitting on.
Oh, I would think so. Yeah, I can't picture it being on a Zoom call, but I'm just because I'm thinking so modern.
Right.
Maybe it's not even that modern for them. But read the room and see where the Prince and the Saudis are at, of how far they want to put what they're ready for or what they're. How about this? How about the women doing the battle royal? Like a little right. bit more women there? Okay. You know, again, read the room, read the temperature of things and go from there. But, you know, you're undoing a kind of a resistance to that kind of culture for centuries, let alone decades.
Yeah.
You know, so I think WWE is accomplishing some things there. And everyone's like, what about the atrocities? Well, what about the atrocities in Vietnam? What about the atrocities in China? What about the atrocities in South Africa? There's atrocities. Mish, all of us, we all have unclean hands in history as far as countries go, don't
Absolutely.
We?
Absolutely.
So it's for anybody to observe, WWE.
It's
is,
not,
and
you're not saying that, you know, it wipes anything clean. We
no,
understand.
It doesn't wipe anything clean, but you can't have this thing. And I'll give Anthony credit for it. He would say some sort of allow people redemption. You've heard him say
sure.
that. And he's right when it comes to that. It's like, if you don't allow redemption, you can't ever have any kind of change. If you were like, nope, that's it. Well, after all, the history, the historical factor that plays into this. But we can do that with every from Spain to America to Mexico to everything. There's been atrocities, and you can go back and have research and show us how many people were killed during this particular war of such and such year and such day. Everyone has that in history, but you have to have a come together moment and a redemption moment. You have to allow redemption, especially when it comes to countries. Because what do we say, Mish? Are we going to blame a bunch of innocent people for what their forefathers did 150 years ago? I mean, allow redemption for God's sakes.
Right.
Allow redemption.
I totally agree. I mean, I think that's the one thing that you have to do is like there was going to be problems. There's going to be political issues, especially when not only they're changing the regime, but they're trying to adopt new cultures within a very strict culture. Let's be honest. Mm-hmm. Saudi Arabia is not exactly a culture known to be very pliant to other people's ideas.
Not at all.
You know, so here you are trying some new things and trying to do new things. Maybe we don't push so hard. On another series of notes, Mustafa Ali he requested his release from WWE. He said, Kev, he said, I have a message that is much bigger than my dreams in pro wrestling. Despite my best efforts, I will not be able to deliver this message while working within WWE. Therefore, I am requesting my release from WWE. 35-year-old from Illinois, been native for WWE since 2016, and despite being a very solid worker, has had limited opportunities to shine. I kind of disagree with that last statement.
I disagree with that last statement.
I think Mustafa Ali has had plenty of opportunities to shine. I mean, hell, they technically gave him a stable. Granted, the stable... You know, I mean, when you're speaking of it in hindsight, there was a lot of limitations, you know, with T-Bar and oh my God, why am I playing?
Mace
and T-Bar, right. Retribution and Mia Yim for a half a second. And like, there were limitations in it, but they tried. And he had other gimmicks there as well. He had other motivations. You know, his back and forth was Ricochet, et cetera, et cetera. I just don't think Mustafa Ali is the guy to set the world on fire in WWE. I mean, it's a nice thought that in his mind he believes that he has a lot more to give, and I think that's going to speak volumes for his future career, Kev. But
yeah, he's motivated. Listen, and I wrote the other day, and again, I even say to myself after I send the tweet, why do I bother? why don't I just go watch Cobra Kai? What am I doing here? Where I did the mid-card thing, and being a mid-card act is not an insult. I said the it factor, there's the mid factor, and a couple of people have already bit that off me. So if you hear that, I said the mid factor, as in mid-card. And there's nothing wrong with a mid-card factor. Some of my favorite wrestlers of all time were mid-card guys.
Right.
That I talk about Al Perez all the time. I talk about Chris Adams. I talk about, they weren't main event guys. They had some titles, some regional titles, but they weren't world champions. There's nothing fucking wrong with that. You need that. That's like saying a guy who had a good second base career on a baseball team and batted, you know, 290. Oh, he didn't bat over 300 and didn't get on the All-Star team more than once in his career. Insignificant. No, he's very significant.
Yeah, but you know what, Kev? Here's the response to that. No kid dreams of going to WrestleMania as the third act.
Oh, of course not. No, I get that. No, but to have a full team, Mish, just
true.
Like,
I,
don't we have starting pitchers and relief pitchers?
Absolutely.
Don't we have bench guys in the NFL? Okay, you're in fourth quarter. You know, same thing. You need, that's a whole team. That's an assembly of a team. In wrestling, it's not all about one guy. That's why I always thought the Hulk Hogan thing was bullshit. He had a great cast of support. Macho Man, Ultimate Warrior, Demolition, British Bulldogs.
Yeah.
Take all those away and just have Hogan on the card.
Bobby,
he would have sold out by himself.
Giant.
Bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bobby Heenan, old Jesse Ventura on announcing. It's the sum of all of its parts put together. And you need some of these strong mid-card acts. Tito Santana, I always bring him up. And not as an insult. I'm a Tito fan. I was cheering for him when he was teaming up with Ivan Putski in the late 70s, when I first started watching wrestling. But I knew that he wasn't going to be that world champion guy, but he would be a factor on the card. IC champion, top part, middle of the card, where you could put on a great match. The Rick Steamboats, the guys like that, the great workers always had. But that doesn't mean they're the top drawing attraction. Tito Santana was never going to be on that marquee. Madison Square Garden, tonight, Tito Santana versus Greg Valentine in the main event. No, it was the semi-main, or it was in the middle of the card for the IC belt. Hogan was on top versus King Kong Bundy. That's the way it should have been, the two larger than lives. And I still believe that holds water today. The star.
Let me ask you this, then.
Changed, though.
Do you think that this is a reflection more of society, the way that Mustafa Ali is handling this, as opposed to a reflection of the way that the wrestling industry has raised people? Because you're right. When you start bringing up all the mid cards from the 80s, 70s, 90s, and even, you know, and you start talking about their validity in order to make other stars even bigger, to make household names, you need those talents. But in today's everybody gets a trophy, everybody's the best, there are no losers kind of environment, do you think Mustafa Ali's reflection on social media asking for his release publicly, which I kind of thought was a little, I don't know, maybe
grandstanding?
Yeah. He was trying to create some notice.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it's like, did you really have to do that? I mean, because it almost feels like even if they do, which I think they will, or they already have, you know, I think you're kind of burning a bridge by doing it publicly, as opposed to doing something in the back saying, hey, you know what, my contract is going to be up soon, et cetera, et cetera. I'd like to leave. You know, I don't want to stay. And then Vince or anybody else that's dealing with him, Nick Khan or somebody else, saying, okay, we understand that, you know, hey, we got your number when you, you know, if something comes up down the road, can we give you a call? And you say, yes, of course, you know, but the way that this is handled is kind of his MO. He's a very, wears his heart on his sleeve kind of guy, very public about the way he feels. It's gotten him into hot water before. I think I've even dealt with him on his Twitter before about it, his social media, me and him.
Yeah,
have gone back and forth.
It's admirable, and it's a detriment to him as well. You can be overly passionate and show, see, he cares.
Right.
We all care. Posting a tweet and being like a grandstanding, look at me, doesn't mean you care more than the guy behind the scenes who's grinding it out and doing the right thing, trying to keep a low profile. Look at me doesn't mean more passion. That's a total misread by a lot of people.
Right.
That's like when Bob Saget died, everyone was – when's John Stamos going to post? That was his best friend. I haven't right. seen the girls yet. The Olsen twins haven't wrote anything yet. Did they even, maybe they don't like Bob anymore or whatever. People were like, Mish, right? It's yeah. like beat the clock. Don't you even feel sometimes, Mish, that celebrities, even sometimes us as podcasters, we are playing beat the clock to give RIPs or sentiments to somebody. And if we didn't do it in a timely fashion, hey, I noticed Wrestling Soup didn't say anything. I thought that was their friend. And you're like, I haven't put my words together yet. I'm trying to figure right, out what to say.
Right.
I that doesn't mean I care less because someone beat me to it in writing a post about an RIP for a wrestler.
Oh, dude,
I used
especially
to like.
When it comes to stuff like that, you're totally right. People are not going to respond, especially if they're grieving, at your convenience.
Right.
They're going to respond when they feel like they can say something proper to all the people that follow them and listen to their words. I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of Bob Saget's closest friends don't say anything till after the funeral.
Yeah.
You know, like that would be the time that I would imagine a lot of people saying, you know, it was nice to see him one last time. I'm going to miss him very much. You know, that's when you speak your feelings. But everybody wants that knee-jerk reaction. They all want that first emotion. They all want that first feel, as opposed to it being private because it's a very sentimental fucking moment. Not everybody yeah. wants to share their blood online, Kev.
It's like when I, you know, before I, speaking for me, I'll say this very briefly. For me, when I switched teams during COVID and stuff, I knew I was leaving one, and I called the guy who I was leaving. I said, I'm going to make a post on Facebook, you know, saying I'm now here now. I'm not going to shit on the club, which I didn't in my post, my former employer, even though people even listen to the show know I had some real, you know, back and forth with that place. I felt there, especially during COVID, we were real let down, Steph, which made me decide to go somewhere else. But I didn't, I gave them a heads up and said, listen, so you're not caught by surprise. I'm doing things the old school way. I'm going this way now. It's better for me. Thanks for everything. We didn't leave off on the best of terms. Thanks for the first few years we had to get. It was private. I didn't really. Oh, look, here's me and my ex-employer Nick's interaction so you guys could see it. It was totally private. And guess what? He didn't say a peep either about it. He wished me luck, and that was it privately, nothing publicly. And I made my announcement the next day, and people were like, oh, I bet you wanted to rip into. Yeah, in my. The kind of the bratty side of Kevin, who thought he was done unjustly and thought I was done wrong. Yes. But then the adult 50 something year old took over and said, I can't do that. And I always talk about not burning bridges, Mish. You've heard me say that for years, including with podcasters, not burning bridges and kind of keeping a cool head and not firing back or letting my mouth override my brain process. Take a step back and think about things. And that's what I've done. And had I gone another way, it wouldn't have been. Yes, I would have got thumbs up and you go, Kev, and good for fuck them. But in the end, what does that mean 24 hours later, Mish? And that can have lasting effects on a career. So you're right. Why not handle things when you're leaving or whatever? Leaving, almost like what Bret Hart said in a way, if he meant it, I don't know, because it went awry. He wanted to leave in a nice way with the WWE. I don't understand why people can't leave in a nice way. You really do sometimes dictate your own path by your actions.
Yes.
And I think to make a big proclamation, I'm leaving, what did he think was going to fucking happen when he did that? Now he puts WWE in a box, you know, and you know, Mish.
Yeah, you're right.
WWE could be like, no, we're not letting you go. And next time, come knock on our fucking door. You know, right? I mean, by the way, has he been released yet? I haven't seen anything.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything either. That's why I put it up as a question. I wasn't sure. I'm like, I don't even really know the status that's happened after this.
They can keep him under what contract until it's done, right?
Right. Oh, yeah. They can make him sit on that shit. You know, I mean, they can't really force him to do shit that he doesn't want to do, but they can't make his ass leave. Like, I mean, he doesn't. So it's this weird situation because he's literally putting the fans, the WWE fans, against the WWE when he makes a post like this. Because there might be a lot of people, and I'll be fair to Mustafa Ali, there may be a lot of people that are like, fuck yeah, you need a better company to work for. You need somewhere else that you can be, your talents can be highlighted, you can be put into really great feuds, you have something to offer in a different company. And these fans now have to sit there and say that directly against WWE. Now, don't get me wrong. It's not like fans aren't happy to just trash WWE for no fucking reason. But why in the fuck is WWE supposed to be pliant when now they got fucking fans randomly pissed off at them because of something that Mustafa Ali wrote? You know, it's...
Yeah. again, another, I don't know who's advising these guys doing this. And maybe it's over. And not for nothing, I didn't know who Mustafa Ali was before he came to the WWE. Didn't know who he was.
Right.
And he's all the better now for being a WWE guy. So when he goes out there, whether it's AEW, whether it's Impact, whether
do you think he's just mad that
He's probably got the boo-boo face, man.
Yeah, like the positions he's put in didn't really get over. They put him with, what was the other guy's name as his mentor? Why am I blanking on his name? Mustafa Ali, and then the young, was he Indian? Oh gosh,
which guy?
It was no, he was Saudi, wasn't he? They put him with that young Saudi guy. Oh my gosh!
I know who you're talking. I'm blanking on his name too. I hate when this happens. I'll know it. I'll learn about it. I'll come to me when I get right. As soon as I hang up.
I'm trying to remember off top.
I was about to say Akeem. It's not Akeem.
No,
but that's a different
game. Mansoor.
Mansoor. Yes. I just saw him the other night on SmackDown. Yeah, Mansoor.
Mansoor is another guy who's got like a lot of talent and stuff like that, and he can go places, but. Yeah, for whatever reason, Ali and Mansoor didn't set the fucking world on fire. That doesn't mean that Mustafa Ali's a bad character or a bad wrestler or anything else like that. But I wonder, like you said, the boo-boo face. I think he feels a little bad that his multiple attempts to not only get noticed, but make himself kind of a household name have failed. And it's like, dude, do you know how many wrestlers have come through wrestling as a whole that have been forgotten?
Yeah.
You know, and I don't mean to say that as like, well, fuck Ali. Now he can be forgotten. But man, not everybody gets to be Hulk Hogan. Not everybody gets to be Stone Cold. Not everybody gets to be Bret Hart.
Not everybody gets to be Tito. I mean, literally, be in the company 15 years and have a Hall of Fame career. Absolutely not. And again, it's not an insult. And I hope people who know me well enough and have heard me on shows over the years know that that's not an insult. It's just a catchphrase thing that I use. But of course, people who don't know me that well on Twitter are like, oh, what's wrong with Santana? Well, there's nothing wrong with him. That was my point.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that. And why can't he be more, Kev, than that? He can be, but sometimes the company doesn't believe in you. If they're not going to push you, is that – listen, I'm sure there's a lot of relief pitchers on the Yankees and on the Chicago Cubs that think they should be starters, but the club didn't see him as that.
Right.
You know, and you either accept it or you can go and try and catch on with another team. But it's a scary world out there, isn't it, Mission? What if you don't catch on with another team? Yeah,
no, you're not wrong. I mean, the reality is you either take your paycheck and smile at the fact that you were able to be a part of greatness in some way or – you get a boo-boo face, you go on social media, and you try to get fans to riot against the company.
And you take a big risk.
Yeah.
A big risk. Yeah. Is it worth it in the end? Mish, how many times is
not only that, he might get blackballed. I mean, shit, let's not fucking mince words here. You know, if he does get shit-canned, maybe he gets shit-canned with a fucking black axe. And they're just like, yeah, don't call this motherfucker, lose his number. And that's the worst possible position, especially
the worst position
when you're talking about the number one company in wrestling. You know?
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. So that's why if you saw Cross's interviews, he would laugh about certain things that happened, but he wasn't. And he even said, you never know. I could on the one he did with Chris Van Vliet. And personally, for me, people ask me which interview I like better. I like the one he did with Renee. I just thought it was because he was with Scarlett. I think it was just a better, more
they flowed behind well the together.
Scenes. Yeah, flowed better.
And you know what? That's kind of cool too. And I mean, I'll let you talk about the interviews in a second. I just wanted to say that it really does show you how good they are together because they were completing each other's sentences on the Renee interview, and I really liked that because it's like, oh look, this isn't just one of those marriages of convenience, or hey, we're just you know, we happen to be like, you could tell that there's a real deep connection between those two. And I fucking loved that. I really did. It's nice to know that people are that legit, not just the Miz and Marie stuff, but it's nice to see like couples that are legit in the business for the same fucking reason with the same dreams and the same goals together. I liked that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I liked both interviews. I thought both were good. Shout out to Cross, by the way. And I thought the one with Renee was a lot of fun to watch. I watched it twice, actually. And the one with Chris I like because I like Chris Van Vliet as a person. I think Chris is one of the best interviewers. As a matter of fact, when Cross was leaving, I was just going to totally wind up doing an interview with Chris. And they had a nice interview, a great talk. You know, Chris is just a pleasant person to even do the interview. And Cross had fun with it and stuff. But there was no, again, even with the thing and joking about the helmet and where's the helmet, you know, yeah. the helmet ever going to make a comeback, you know, on the independent circuit.
Yeah.
But, you know, and just having fun with the way Cross, you didn't see any kind of like, I'm just so bummed out and, oh, I want to bash them so badly. He's just like, happened, whatever. I'm more the better for the experience of being there. If I could do it over again, I would go back. And he totally means that. He's not because he realizes that Drew McIntyre went back and became a bigger star.
Right.
Why can't Cross go back?
Absolutely.
Why can't anybody go back? Especially if they're still in their 30s, they're young enough in their career. And if you really believe in yourself, you can go home again. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibilities. And again, that whole thing of we just talked about before. Why burn bridges when you don't have to? You don't have to burn down your ex employer, whether it's a company, a podcast you were on, a club that you worked at, or even a team that you used to be on.
Yeah,
there's no reason to do that. And it's not, oh, I'm the bigger person. It's not necessary. It's just not fucking necessary.
Yeah, no, totally agree. Kev, fun show, my friend.
Absolutely.
Good topics and stuff like that. Why don't you go ahead and plug for everybody?
Yeah, Castle Chronicles on DTKC Patreon every Thursday at 10 o'clock. We're live on the Discord chat. Always a lot of fun. Love doing that show. It's become just a fun escapism for me at this point. So that's every Thursday. You can sign up at any time, DTKC Patreon. Go to Don Tony Patreon and sign up today if you haven't already, or you can rejoin us and check out the shows again. And also Breakfast Soup is on there. For me, my other stuff that I do, non-wrestling, Castle and Chicky Podcast Adventures, which is on Spreaker iHeart. And a new episode should be dropping, I believe, tomorrow. And we just did a full Bill Murray career retrospective. I had a lot of fun with that because we're both huge Bill Murray fans. And Chicky is a notorious Ghostbusters mark. You'll hear about the insane amount of memorabilia she has from Ghostbusters. She's going to open up her own Ghostbusters museum. Wow. You'll hear about it tomorrow. I learned some things about my 20-year friend that I didn't even know. And it was a lot of fun going over the Bill Murray stuff. And you'll hear about all my obsession with the movie Meatballs.
And we need to do one on Captain America sometime.
We definitely do need to do one. Actually, the three of us should do it on Captain America. That would be awesome because she's as knowledgeable about it as too. But yeah, having a lot of fun with that. So yeah, the Bill Murray episode should drop. We're recording today, Wednesday, on iHeart Spreaker. So check it out.
Awesome. So much love to everybody. Make sure to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, et cetera, Instagram. Also, check out the regular show on thewrestlingsoup.com. Or you can find us on Spreaker, iHeartMedia, everywhere podcasts are heard. Also, make sure to join our Patreon, patreon.com/wrestlingsoup. We've got a couple of shit boxes up in the can. We've also got a new Frank and Gus for everybody. So extra content from myself and Joey. And then, of course, the regular show on Thursday night, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So much love to everybody. See you guys on Thursday. Peace.